As I mentioned this morning, today marks the 24th anniversary of John Sweat's passing. 24 years in the time calendar is a significant date. They group years into 12-year cycles. This means two complete cycles since he's left. So it's good to think about what he left behind. Of course, he left the monastery. And he left the schedule that we follow, the way we run the monastery. We try to hold to that as much as we can. And then, of course, he left teachings. Remember one day he was talking about how when he had malaria one time, he was contemplating the state of his body, the state of his mind. And there suddenly occurred to him, he had a direct experience of three out of the Four Noble Truths. The first, suffering. Second, the cause of suffering. And the fourth, the path to the end of suffering. But he didn't have experience yet of the third, which meant he didn't have complete knowledge of those truths. So that piqued his curiosity. How could he really know the other three if he didn't know the third? So he devoted himself more to the path. And apparently that's how he gained stream entry. He didn't say that, he didn't make that claim. But the way he described the insights he got sounded like stream entry. Reminded me of a John Fuang story. He'd been suffering from severe headaches. Chinese medicine didn't work, Western medicine didn't work, Thai medicine didn't work. They're getting chronic. Got to the point where he had to have people, novices or monks, staying in his room when he slept at night in case he woke up and needed hot compresses or other medicines. And one night he woke up and the monks who were supposed to be looking after him were all fast asleep. The first thought that went through his mind was, who's looking after whom here? And I told himself, well, as long as I'm up, I might as well meditate. So he did. Suddenly he realized he'd been going about things wrong. He'd been trying to get rid of the pain. Or pain, dukkha, is something you're supposed to comprehend. So he analyzed it. Tried to comprehend it as best as he could. And again, what he said sounded an awful lot like stream entry. He didn't claim to be, that it was stream entry, but that's what it sounded like. He said one of the realizations was that as soon as you engage with the senses, as soon as you open your eyes, there was pain already, which indicates that the experience of stream entry is something so pleasant, so easeful. The mere opening of your eyes would be painful in comparison. So in both cases, they took the Four Noble Truths as their guide and asked questions in line with those truths. This is the process of what's called appropriate attention. We apply the Four Noble Truths to your experience. Unlike some traditions where they say every moment is a new moment, totally fresh, it should be approached with totally fresh eyes. The Buddha taught that you approach each moment in the framework of the Four Noble Truths, the framework of appropriate attention. And that means you try to do the duties appropriate to each of the truths. Try to figure out what does it mean to develop the path? What does it mean to comprehend suffering? What does it mean to abandon the cause? What does it mean to realize the cessation of suffering? Now that is something you do approach with new eyes, because these are questions. We've heard the duties many, many times. We've heard the truths many times. The question is, do we really understand them? But the framework is there. It gives us guidance as to what questions to ask. And the first truth is suffering, by the way, pain. The word dukkha in Pali means pain. I've heard people say that it should be translated instead as unsatisfactory. But you don't say, oh, you have an unsatisfactory in your arm. or unsatisfactory in your head. You have a pain in your arm. You have a pain in your head. If you translate dukkha as unsatisfactory, it makes it sound like it's something subjective. That if you tell yourself to be satisfied with the way things are, you'll be okay. But that's not the Buddhist point. Things are painful. We don't say aging is unsatisfactory, illness is unsatisfactory, death is unsatisfactory. These things are painful. The Buddha never defines dukkha, just like he never defines sukha, pleasure. He talks about training the mind to get rid of dukkha and to find true pleasure. He doesn't define any of those terms except for the training. He goes into a lot of detail on how you train the mind. And in the course of the training, your sense of your mind is going to develop, your sense of what counts as sukha, pleasure, dukkha, pain, is going to develop as well. Things that you regard as pleasurable right now. As you get deeper and deeper into the practice, you begin to realize that engaging with the senses, having to construct aggregates around your sensory experience, involves a lot of stress. Even in pleasant experiences, a lot of construction has to go on. The more you get sensitive to this, the work the mind has to do in order to fabricate its experience, the more your understanding of what dukkha is going to develop. To the point, as I said, where, as John Fung mentioned, when you've had the experience of the ultimate happiness, the happiness of the unconditioned, you come back to your engagement with the senses, and the first impression you get is it's painful. Even in the areas where you're looking for pleasure. So we are working with dukkha as suffering, stress. And when we contemplate in terms of the three perceptions, the purpose of those perceptions, of course, is to make you see that it's the things you've been clinging to are not worth it. The things you've been craving are not worth it. In that sense, the whole set of inconstancy, stress, not self, is meant to make you see that things are unsatisfactory. But the dukkha part, the suffering part, the painful part, that's an important realization. The things you take for granted as being okay, when you get really sensitive, you begin to realize they are burdensome. They place a weight on the mind. A good reason to want to find something better. The same with inconstancy. We work with the breath, we work on getting the mind into concentration to make it as constant as possible. We look at the distractions that would pull us away, and we want to see that they are very inconstant and unreliable in comparison to the concentration. But as you get deeper and deeper into the concentration, you see that even levels of right concentration that you enjoyed in the beginning begin to seem gross, stressful. Your sense of what counts as dukkha and sukha, pleasure and pain, gets more refined. And so you begin to see that the inconstancy even of the concentration is there. And that's something that constantly has to be maintained. You can't just let it ride. Not the case you push a button and you're done with it. You have to keep looking after it, tending to it. And part of the mind wants to say, isn't there something you don't have to keep tending to all the time? That's when you begin to disidentify with these things. So there's certain psychology to seeing the inconstancy and the stress in the inconstancy. And the perception of not self and what is stressful and inconstant. All in the context of the Four Noble Truths. It's part of the duty of comprehending suffering and abandoning its cause. So you're sitting, you're meditating. You're trying to develop your sensitivities. the breath, the way we feel the body from within, the way we sense our mind from within. We tend to run roughshod over these things as we stampede out to look at the world outside, engage with the world outside, are fascinated by what's happening with the world outside. Our culture has taught us to be desensitized to precise areas where we should be most familiar, and also the precise areas where awakening is to be found. They're trying to bring some sensitivity to your practice. So one thing I noticed both about Ajahn Suwad and Ajahn Phurong, even though they're the sons of peasants, they're very precise people, very observant. They had very refined sensitivities. Something that anyone can develop, no matter what your background. But work on that. That's where discernment comes. Not from knowing the terms. Not from being able to label things correctly. It comes from being sensitive. There is stress there. Why is there stress? One of Ajahn Suwad's most striking talks was when he talked about getting the mind into concentration. And seeing wherever there's stress in the concentration, that's where avijja, or ignorance, is going to be found. So you look there, try to clear it away. And things get more refined, and you look there again. As you get more sensitive to what's going on, you find more things to clear away. That's how the deathless is found. That's how we find the goal of this practice. To look at things in terms of the Four Noble Truths and in terms of appropriate attention, the questions around the Four Noble Truths, what the truths mean, what are their duties. That's the training. And as you train the mind to get past suffering and to find genuine happiness, your sense of the mind will grow, your sense of what counts as stress and pain will grow. Your sense of what counts as true happiness will develop. We're not here to arrive at an ultimate definition of these things. We're here to use these things to find the ultimate. That's the tradition that our teachers have left for us. As Ajahn Phurong once said about Ajahn Lee, his teacher, he said, Ajahn Lee showed me the brightness of the world. Ajahn Phurong, Ajahn Suwad, they've showed us the brightness of the world. The brightness is something we can find inside. We follow their example, we follow their instructions. But to see that brightness is going to require that we get really, really sensitive to what we're doing. And develop higher and higher standards for what we find is acceptable. That's what this is all about.